Hey guys, welcome back to Defining Truth podcast, episode 49, almost 50. We got an interesting show today, but first, if you would love to do so, and I think you do, you should subscribe because it helps us and it shows your support. So check us out on YouTube. Find Defining Truth on YouTube. You can search Defining Truth, Brandon Jones, Josiah O'Neill, etc. But definitely when you find it, hit the subscribe button. It's really cool. You can watch us and put a face to the voice. Or if you like listening, you can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. That's Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify. We're everywhere. Okay, that's the joy of distribution. I'm Josiah O'Neill with my co-host Brandon Jones. Today we're going to talk about the cabinet debates raging in D.C. as Democrats wriggle in agony over their stunning national defeat. America spoke loud and clear. No more woke nonsense. No more DEI failures. No more socialist propaganda and self-hatred. In short, America's back. All right, guys, welcome back. Like we said, episode 49. I can't believe it's been 49 episodes. We're almost at our 50th. We should do something special for 50. I don't know what we could do. I'll buy Brandon a coffee.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the nominations this week. It's been a hot week in D.C. As I mentioned, Democrats are wriggling in agony at their stunning defeat. It's you know, you love to see it. Love to see it. The return of common sense has just been astounding. I mean, it's unbelievable, especially when you start comparing the difference between the two administrations. I mean, you know that many Americans got to be thinking, like, what in the world was happening? Anyways, three nominations we're going to watch closely going on this week as the Democrats attempt to disrupt the American people's will, per usual. Republicans are responding by dropping giant truth bombs. Hold on. I have one here somewhere. Where's it at? Check this out. This is a truth bomb. Dropping a lot of these in D.C. this week. Something that has not been heard in the D.C. area for about 4 years. The three in question this week, Tulsi Gabbard, nominated for Director of National Intelligence, RFK Jr. for Secretary of Health and Human Services, and Kash Patel, Director of the FBI. And we're going to talk about why this is important. Well, let me just tell you. Because these three areas in particular will help shape the future of America and directly counter much of the damage inflicted by the American-hating leftist over the course of the last administration. From vitriol nonsense peddled as health advice to the weaponization of America's leading law enforcement agency, accomplishing the exact opposite of its design, and I'm talking about the FBI, we'll get into that more in a minute, to the intelligence community losing its way in the dangerous la-la land of DEI confusion. America's dangerously at risk until now. So, Brandon, let's get into it. Who do we want to talk about first of these three?
Well, actually, if we could, let's just do a rundown of who's been confirmed so far.
Yeah, let's do that.
Just really quick. So Pete Hegseth, Secretary of Defense, in a historic 50-50 tie broken by Vice President J.D. Vance. He faced allegations of drinking, financial mismanagement, sexual misconduct, but it was he was confirmed, and it was one of the closest votes. Well, I mean, I don't know how you get closer than a 50-50 tie. Anyways, one of the closest
but
votes.
He's in,
yeah, for Defense Secretary. Kristi Noem, Secretary of Homeland Security, was confirmed 59-34. She's obviously a staunch advocate for immigration policies and has described illegal immigration correctly, in my opinion, as an invasion. Keyword there, illegal immigration, just so if anybody tries.
And she was out this week. There was a bunch of videos of her riding around with DHS guys, and she's like boots on the ground right away.
It's yeah, cool. She's on the ground, and she will, it'll be a continuation of Trump's border security policies. Sort of a less significant or less controversial one, Scott Bessent, Secretary of Treasury, was voted in 68-29. He defends Trump's tariffs, tax cut extensions, and tougher policies on China and Russia, America's enemies, go figure. Sean Duffy, Secretary of Transportation, 77-22. His focus is on modernizing infrastructure and transportation safety, and he had broad bipartisan support. John Ratcliffe, for CIA director, 74-25 emphasized keeping the CIA nonpartisan and avoiding politicalization. Also, another relatively smooth confirmation, which is surprising for a CIA director, just given today's sort of climate. One that's not listed on my notes, but I know off the top of my head, Marco Rubio was confirmed for Secretary of State 99-0. No opposition. So that should be a good thing and shows huge bipartisan support for his. Getting into the pending nominations, RFK for Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tulsi Gabbard for Director of National Intelligence, and then Kash Patel, FBI Director. The first one on my list is RFK. I don't know if you want to hit that first.
Yeah, let's do it.
Just some background for those that don't know. I'm sure everybody does at this point. He's an environmental lawyer, and he's known for his vaccine skepticism. He was questioned over anti-vaccine rhetoric, faced Republican criticism for supporting abortion rights, and raised concerns among agricultural and pharmaceutical industries. His tagline is sort of, not sort of, it is Make America Healthy Again. His Senate support is uncertain so far, and he's facing pushback from both parties. So let's dive into why that's happening.
I thought one of the most ironic sort of exchanges with RFK Jr. was actually the American Indian, Elizabeth Warren. She goes after him for something about big pharma and money. Do you know that while saying that, she has received just at or over $5 million from big pharma?
Yeah, of course.
These people are unbelievable, man. Yeah. I just feel like the era of clowning the American people ends with the current administration and who they're bringing in, because they're actually going for common sense and qualification, right? Something that the Democrats have repeatedly attacked. They say, you know, the admins' picks are only because of their loyalty. And it's like, well, yeah, that's a big part of building a team. You know, like, are you going to follow the captain? But really what they're attacking is their loyalty to America, because what they're disloyal to is this vitriol anti-American ideology that the left's been pushing forever, which, you know, the American people wholeheartedly rejected during this last administration. But I thought that was funny. Anyways.
Yeah. So just Robert Kennedy Jr., his opposition so far, it seems, is going to come from Mitch McConnell, who I cannot believe is still in office. That guy's like 100 years old.
Who votes for that guy?
Somebody, a lot of people in Kentucky, apparently. Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska. McConnell, I didn't know this. McConnell's a polio survivor, and he's taken issue with Kennedy's anti-vaccine comments, which
was that in the 1920s?
Yeah, probably. And he is going to receive likely support from Democrats Sheldon Whitehouse and John Fetterman, who every time I read that guy's name, I laugh.
Fetterman?
Yeah, because he's like, I mean, he rolls up to the Senate confirmation hearings, or was it the...
In like sweatpants?
Yeah, I think it was the inauguration. He was like in basketball shorts. Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy. So Kennedy's positions on food industry reform and biomedical research funding have raised concerns among senators from agricultural states, and those the ties with the pharmaceutical industry, as we touched on. So it'll be interesting. I mean,
I think the primary thing with RFK, which we've heard him say repeatedly, is that he has prayed to God literally for the opportunity to get America healthy. And he's done that for many
specifically
years.
America's children.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's spat off some very, very important facts, which he is, you know, claiming that he's going to address, mainly that we are the sickest country in the world. Year after year, we come in, as far as chronic diseases, as the sickest nation on planet Earth. You know, somebody asked him about COVID and all that stuff, and he's like, was very quick to remind them that the average person who died of COVID in the United States during the height of the pandemic had 3.5 chronic diseases.
Yeah, comorbidities.
I mean, it's just like, you know, why would you not want this? And let's just be fair here, right? The Democrats attacking a guy who wants to go after bad things in our food and make America healthy. Why on earth would you oppose someone like that? What reason? I mean, and then they want to be like, well, you're only chosen because of your loyalty. Well, the last person in your seat was a dude that dressed as a woman. So you know, talk about priorities and ideology. And the American people, again, like we keep repeating, have rejected that sort of DEI incompetent approach to choosing people based on their allegiance to an anti-American ideology. And we're going back to what is the core purpose of this position? The health of the American people. So I don't doubt that RFK is going to get nominated. I think they're giving him a hard time, much like Tulsi Gabbard, who we're going to get into, because I think the Democrats are sore losers. They're upset that they have lost many people on their side of the aisle who have gotten a sudden injection of common sense and have left these terrible, terrible groups of people.
Well, and so that's the bottom line right there. If RFK was still a Democrat and he was being confirmed under the Biden administration for health secretary, they would overwhelmingly support him.
Oh, absolutely.
Nothing that he's saying, like, yeah, we should look into what is being put into our bodies, whether it's red dyes or vaccines. I mean, I'm not anti-vaccine, but yeah, I mean, if the bottom line is if he was saying the same things as a Democrat, there would be overwhelming support.
Of course. Are you kidding? Yeah. If anybody said anything about him and he was a Democrat, they'd be like, oh, you're talking to a disabled person. Look at his throat disease. You know how he talks and everything. They'd be like, you're a bigot. And how dare you attack America's disabled representatives? I can't handle the hypocrisy of the left when it comes to this. Like, you know, if you're a Democrat and you're listening, and I don't mean like the random follower out there, I mean like if you're in a leadership position, you have the opportunity to show the American people that you actually care about them. Because so far, and you'll see as we go through these nominations, we have not seen a single divisive topic or issue. Everything this admin is doing is for the betterment of America and her people, period. And that's an inarguable point. So, you know, why not kick back? You lost big time during this election. Kick back and help the American people. And it just might actually help you, you know, on the next go around, because everybody will say, wow, they actually did care about America. But this is why they lost in the first place. The Democrats have no clear vision. You could not tell me what they do for you. Their platform is extremely unclear. It's just full of hatred and hatred for America, hatred for people, hatred for conservatives. I mean, they're really defined by their hatred. And you see that everywhere. You see it in social media, mainstream media. You see it in the choices they make. And we continue to see it in these nominations. So,
well, and he did, just to clarify, because I think the big controversy, or one of the big controversies around him, is his vaccine. So to be clear, he said several times during his hearing on Wednesday that he supports vaccines. He was quoted saying, news reports have claimed that I'm anti-vaccine or any industry. I am neither. I am pro-safety, end quote. And then he did pledge to a Democrat on the committee, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, that to do nothing as HHS secretary, that he would do nothing as HHS secretary that makes it difficult or discourages people from taking vaccines, like for measles or polio. I think a lot of it comes, his opinion on vaccines comes from the rush of the COVID vaccines and the potential harms that came for that for certain groups, like men aged 19 to 25, for example, that were suddenly experiencing inflamed hearts and things like that. So he does support the measles and polio vaccines.
Yeah, he has a appropriate distrust for government. Not necessarily the treatments, but, you know, the ideologues behind these massive pushes, like what we saw during COVID, which was one of the greatest health scandals in history. CBS News quoted RFK as saying, I support the measles vaccine, I support the polio vaccine, emphasizing his backing of certain immunizations. He went on to say, and I quote, if we want to uptake of vaccines, we need a trustworthy government. That's what I want to restore to the American people and to the world. I think that sums up his perspective right there. He takes into account the science and the health advisors, et cetera, but he's extremely skeptical of bureaucrats who manipulated people to make billions of dollars for the pharma industry and themselves. And I think that's an appropriate perspective to have. So, yeah, I think he'll get, I think he's less controversial than some of the other nominees. So I think he'll get through. I just, you know, I think the Democrats are just being Democrats.
All right. Should we move into Tulsi Gabbard?
Yeah. So let me open up with with this one here. So Tulsi, let's just give a quick background. She's a former Democrat. Okay. In 2000,
there's a trend here happening with former Democrats.
In 2022, she left the party to become an independent, and she hung out there for a couple years. And she stated multiple times her disdain for the apparent hatred for America. She was quoted as stating, and I quote, "The Democratic Party is led by fanatical ideologues who don't believe in freedom," end quote. In other circles, we refer to those types of people as anti-American or communist or socialist. Pick your poison. So Tulsi left to become an independent. And then she further elaborated her decision in a book she authored titled "For Love of Country, Leave the Democrat Party Behind," which is self-explanatory. 2024 comes around. She officially joins the Republican Party. And in 2025 was tapped by the Trump administration to be the director of national intelligence. Now, she immediately came under scrutiny back previously when she was running. Hillary Clinton went after her, called her every name in the book. That's Hillary's style, though, right? She, like, demonizes everyone. Let's just pause on that for a minute, because Hillary's attacks towards Tulsi were centered around calling her a Russian asset. Right, which is like her thing. Hillary's like, everyone's a Russian.
Yeah. As opposed to Hillary, who was an Iranian asset? Or
the irony is Hillary actually did that, right? Yeah. Like her people like faked a dossier and were actually the ones committing crimes and deleting emails and all of this nonsense. So it's just, again, the hypocrisy is astounding. But she really, and I mean, this is my opinion. I feel like the Democrats, this is a sore subject for them because she was a Democrat, right? Her sort of leaving and being behind the curtain on the inside and then coming out into the open and saying these people hate freedom, that bothered them. And I don't think that they've ever really let that go. They really have a disdain for her, which is evident in these hearings. Notably, though, and you know, we talked before the show quite a bit about this, notably, everyone's taking issue with her Edward Snowden comments. So not to skip over this for the sake of truth, in the past, she has made comments claiming Snowden was a hero and a whistleblower, et cetera. She's now walked that back. And but I want to let's extrapolate this here for a minute. So during the years, this is like during the Obama years, right? You had several incidents of people that leaked information that were driven by all of this anti-American vitriol that started popping up. Snowden is one of them. Another one we talked about was Bradley Manning. He ends up, you know, becoming transgender in jail after his arrest. He did the same thing, though. He released almost a million classified documents. They were diplomatic and defense documents and was arrested. Of course, Obama, again, the hypocrisy here with them talking about Tulsi. Obama pardons Manning, right, and commutes his sentence, which is mind-blowing because he literally just did what he did. It was black and white. There was no discussion or argument. So during those years, though, you saw a lot of, as we've discussed on this show before, insider threats that were generated, or at least the catalyst for them was all of this anti-American rhetoric that the Democrats espoused. It was really the Obama administration that first brought a major, it was like this cataclysmic shift in the Democratic Party from kind of American to full-blown anti-American and socialist. And all of their rhetoric, all of their propaganda was like, America's bad, America's racist, the government's bad, the government's racist, DEI, everything started shifting towards this sort of progressive Marxist way of doing things. And as a result, it created a lot of insider threats. These people were virtue signaling, self-righteous liberals who thought that it was their obligation, because the Democrats told them to and CNN backed it up, to, you know, tell the world about the big bad Republicans and the government. Tulsi, now specifically talking about Snowden, has walked it back quite a bit. I mean, I want to read you a quote. Let me pull it up so I don't mess it up. But basically, she said that. I can't find the quote. Where is it at? I can't find it, but here's what basically what she said. She said that she didn't agree with the way that Edward Snowden did it, that he could have come to an intelligence committee, he could have approached members of Congress, et cetera, and he didn't, and he broke the law. That's what she's stating. Now, the kickback on that is that she had previously referred to him as a hero. Here's what I think. This is just my opinion, right? I think that her opinion has probably changed now from 2017 when she said that. And that's why I brought up the whole Obama year stuff, because during that time, especially where she was at in life as a sort of independent, maybe leaning libertarian, she was on Joe Rogan's podcast. You have a group of people that was leaning towards this ideology of sympathy towards, like, we hate the government. And I understand the distrust for government, right? I mean, that's, you're not American if you don't distrust your government. You should. But many of these people went too far into where they committed treason. And I don't know that Tulsi would say the same thing today as she did then. Now, some people are like, oh, that's why you're a terrible person. I don't share that. I think that you should flip-flop if it's from bad to good, and we should celebrate those changes. People get mad when they're like, well, you didn't say that a year ago, and now you are. And it's like, well, isn't that a good thing? Don't we want people to learn and progress and change their mind? Now, it's a bad thing if you're going from good to bad, obviously, reneging on a promise or, shifting, say, your pro-American stance to that of, like, America's enemies. Obviously, that's bad. But you have to exercise good judgment and scrutiny in each individual situation. And in this case, she has repeatedly stated, that he broke the law, he committed a crime, he didn't do it the right way, etc. So,
I will say, just to take the other side of this, so it was a little bit more than just comments. So in 2019, she did state, if it wasn't for Snowden, the American people would have never learned that NSA was collecting phone records, spying on Americans. Okay, true. She also co-sponsored legislation with then Representative Matt Gaetz to drop espionage charges against Snowden. Then in 2019, praising him for exposing the NSA's mass surveillance. So to your point, okay, then you can have the flip and say, I was wrong, or I shouldn't have done that, et cetera. That's okay. It's interesting to me, and maybe you have some insight into why, she failed in the confirmation hearings when pressed by senators on both sides to even today label him as a traitor. So I'm curious as to why she wouldn't just come out and say that. She's instead focused on preventing future unauthorized disclosures. Now, maybe in a Senate hearing where it's very hot and intense and there's a lot of back and forth, that's not the time to do that. I would love to have her maybe go on another 3-hour Joe Rogan podcast and explain exactly what her difference in opinion on that is now compared to what she was thinking, 4, 5, 6 years ago. It just seems weird to me that she just wouldn't come out and say that he's a traitor if she's going to be in a position of Director of National Intelligence. It would seem like that would be kind of a softball question from a supporting senator to give her that question. Her say, yeah, of course I think that. So I don't know why she wouldn't.
Yeah, and hopefully she learns this going forward. I mean, she probably will get confirmed, is my opinion. And as the, one of the highest people in the world as far as IC community goes at ODNI, you would hope that the importance and the gravity of this situation is understood. I mean, the fact is he did commit treason. So let me just share my opinion on Snowden and why. And Brandon, we talked about this a little bit before the show. So as I mentioned, during the Obama years, there was a lot of insider threats generated by ideology, right? Stuff that was propagated in the mainstream media, places like CNN repeated a lot of nonsense. And okay, so people thought it was justified to commit treason against their country. Now, there is a true and right place for whistleblowers when observing wrongdoing, okay? But the age of social media has kind of convinced your average teenager that they are above everyone, or I should say that no one is above them, right? That they should be able to do whatever they want. There's no process I can do as I please, say as I please. And you kind of see this mentality in people that I can mention, like Bradley Manning, and then in Edward Snowden, where he didn't like something that he saw, and it was mainly the NSA and what their domestic activities, right? But let's put this into perspective. You joined a spy agency.
Yeah.
So you're upset that they're spying and you don't like one particular area of that was domestic, and you personally thought that wasn't right. Never mind the process it took to implement it and FISA, et cetera, et cetera. So I agree with Tulsi when she said, you know, he should have done it the right way. And I would support that. I support whistleblowers through a process that doesn't endanger American lives. That's not what Snowden did.
No, it was sort of misguided individualism. I mean, it's like you don't like something that's, I mean, to simplify it, he didn't like something that was happening at his workplace or that his boss was doing. And instead of appropriately approaching that subject and going through the proper channels, he kind of, like, for lack of a better term, whined like a baby and then exposed, you know.
And he joined our enemies.
And then he goes to Hong Kong, China. You know, we talked about it for a long time before the podcast. He was only there for 2 weeks. So Hong Kong, China maybe didn't find him useful. And then he goes to Russia where he's been, you know, for over a decade. So I think just to circle back to the Tulsi Gabbard, it's the same thing with RFK Jr. If she was still a Democrat saying all of these same things, they would love her. The problem is she was a rising star for the most part, up and coming in the Democrat Party. She decides that the Democrat Party that she grew up in has lost its way. She joins the Republicans and now she's like public enemy number one. And the Democrats are still stuck with
hypocrites.
AOC, who's basically like a nothing burger.
Yeah, so that's why I pointed out that they have such a big problem with her opinions on Snowden. And up to this point, that's all they were. It was just opinion on a talk show. That's it. When they, the Democrats, I mean, actually took action, they pardoned a traitor named Bradley Manning. So they're such hypocrites. But to be clear, just I want to explain this because maybe everybody's not familiar with, you know, the intel community or how this goes. But like what Snowden did was straight up treason. It wasn't a whistleblower thing. He went to America's enemies. So follow this, right? You love your country so much, you betray them? How does that make any sense? And if you think for a minute that you can go and live in one of America's, one of the greatest opponents that we have, right? I mean, you have China, you have Russia. They're up there on that list. If you think that you can go and live there and hang out for free without giving anything, you are out of your mind. You clearly don't know anything about the IC or how that works, right? Like, he chose to do a walk-in somewhere. He obviously communicated his intentions. And, you know, you asked me earlier, well, how is he there? He's in Russia doing panels, making money. Yeah, that's because he got a full debrief, obviously. He left NSA and Russia was like, sure, you can stay here, but you're going to tell us everything you know. It's called treason. That's what he did. And I don't understand why that's, you know, celebrated or like he straight up is a traitor. I don't have a high opinion of him, and it sets a very, very bad precedent for our intelligence community that, okay, if you see something you don't like, then address it appropriately. You don't go and commit treason and endanger American lives. The information that he leaked definitely got people killed, 100%.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you, I don't know if you want to get into it in depth, but another point of contention for opposition, people who are opposing Tulsi, is this 2017 meeting with the Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad has sort of been a focus point of concern. I don't know if you want to touch on that. I didn't know anything about it, but just some background, I guess. She, in 2017, when she was a congresswoman, she kind of sort of undertook this self-described fact-finding mission to Syria and Lebanon, during which time she met with various political and religious leaders, including a quote, unplanned meeting with then Syrian President al-Assad. Her purpose for the meeting, or her sort of assessing, or her attempt to assess the situation, was to gain firsthand insight into the Syrian conflict by speaking directly with parties involved, advocacy against U.S. intervention. She previously introduced legislation to end what she termed the illegal war to overthrow the Syrian government. Is this a normal thing to do as a sort of congresswoman to go meet with a leader like this? Is this a big deal? Not a big deal? You have any opinion at all? Or?
Yeah, so it's not unheard of. This is, you know, part of the purview of elected officials. They do stuff like this sometimes. And, you know, sometimes it's celebrated and sometimes it's not. I think it fits perfectly into the narrative that we're describing of her sort of transition from liberalism into common sense. That journey had to pass through the wildly sort of ignorant land of libertarianism. Like, it had to go through that, like, who am I? What am I doing? It was like a coming of age story, right? Tulsi's not the first to go and meet people and try to get answers on her own. I understand the motivation was correct. You're trying to skirt the bureaucracy because they're liars, right? And that's how a lot of American people feel too. Notably, I think probably one of the biggest examples of this previous to her would have been Charlie Wilson, right? And they made a movie about this. I think it was Tom Hanks played him, Charlie Wilson's War. This happened in the 1980s. Charlie secretly funneled U.S. support to Afghan Mujahideen to fight the Soviets. And this was like a thing that he did all on his own. He was seen as like a covert hero because he was fighting communism. And then later he was criticized when the Mujahideen evolved into the Taliban and became Al-Qaeda, right? So it's like, you know, she's not the first one to go have a discussion with someone. Her reasons included she wanted to know the truth, right? She didn't like that there were Christians and other minorities being hunted down by Islamic jihadist groups who the U.S. was backing because we wanted regime change. So again, it fits perfectly in a Joe Rogan podcast, right? It's like the typical person who doesn't like the government but has never worked in public service and doesn't understand like how the world works. There's this sort of like confusion. I don't have a problem with her going and trying to find out. I think the real question is, well, what did you do with the information that you found, right?
Yeah, so her critics of this meeting argued that by meeting with Assad, she sort of like legitimized his human rights violations. And then the trip was funded by a Cleveland-based Arab-American organization sympathetic to Assad. Her justification was exactly what you said, which was a pursuit of peace. She emphasized the importance of engaging with all parties to achieve peace, stating, quote, we've got to be able to meet with anyone that we need to if there's a possibility that we could achieve peace, end quote. So, probably the right idea, maybe poor timing or poor execution. But
well, and I don't necessarily, I'm not on the bandwagon of hating anyone for having meetings. The Democrats do this all the time, right? They don't want anybody to talk to Putin. They hate when Trump talked to Kim Jong-un.
So that's what I was going to say too. So like, okay, you legitimize, quote unquote, legitimize him for his human rights violations. Okay, well, Russia commits human rights violations. Iran does.
China.
North Korea. But you have to meet with these people because if you don't talk to them, that's called isolationism. Yeah. And then we've seen, like we've said a number of times on this podcast, why that doesn't work.
Well, it's the whole cancel culture thing, right? It's like, well, if you met with them, you must agree with everything they say. It's like, no, sometimes you have to talk with your enemies. You it doesn't imply anything, you know? Yeah. I think actions speak louder than words, and I think that's where it's going. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that Tulsi's heart is in the right place. She's clearly been on a journey. Leaving the Democrats was an amazing decision and pointed her in the right direction. And now she's come all the way to being aligned with the current administration. And that's the bottom line, right? And this is what the left is so obsessed with their cancel culture, like you're all or nothing, you're with me unto death. They're purist with Marxism, right? They don't understand how an administration can build a coalition of diverse perspectives and views. RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, they're people that are different, and then they criticize their loyalty to Trump. And it's like, well, that's the whole point. If you're gonna join a team, you gotta follow orders, right?
Yeah.
And they're still accomplishing their mission, but they agree. It's not blind loyalty, it's agreement.
Yeah.
Right. It's like someone being mad at me because I love my country. And it's like, well, this administration loves our country too. So you're a puppet. It's like, no.
Yeah.
We both just love our country. So we agree on the best way to get there. If you don't have that, you don't have a team. So I don't understand why that's a negative thing.
All right. So moving into Kash Patel, who's a nominee for FBI director. So there's partisanship concerns with his past involvement in efforts to discredit investigations. This made me laugh. We talked about this earlier, too. So Patel's past involvement in efforts to discredit investigations into Russian interference in the 2016 election has led to concerns about his objectivity and potential political bias. OK, the thing with this is the Russia interference has already been debunked. So there's no, his effort to discredit it, it worked. It was discredited.
Yeah. They were liars.
Yeah, they were lying about that situation.
Yeah.
Another scrutiny and opposition point is his FBI reform plans, his proposals to overhaul the FBI and potential impacts on the agency's independence have been scrutinized by senators from both parties. Notable senators who are opposing, none have come out in publicly named opposition, but concerns have been raised, like I said, by members of both parties regarding Patel's potential plans for the FBI. Some Republican senators have expressed support, emphasizing the need to reform. I think we can both agree after this last administration, the FBI needs a huge overhaul in the way that they operate business, especially with the 51 intelligence officers, some of which were from the FBI, that basically lied on the dossier or whatever it is. I'll let you get into that.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is he's disrupting the swamp, and all these people are upset at him because he talks about the deep state and the weaponization of DOJ, and they're like, look at these conspiracies. And you're like, well, that's exactly what the deep state would say.
Yeah. You
know, like, he's exactly the kind of person that they don't want exposing the truth. And again, his mission is very simple. Get the FBI back to what it's designed to do. Right? To protect the American people as the premier law enforcement agency at the federal level. They go after corruption, they go after spies, and that's not what they've been doing. Over the last several years, they've been completely focused on their political opponents. Literally, the Biden administration used the Department of Justice to listen, this is how bad it is. They didn't go after homegrown terrorists or ISIS or, you know, espionage threats. No, their main focus was people praying outside of abortion clinics and putting them in jail, or going after the main political opponent in a presidential race. Absolute toolbag communist type tactics. And that all needs to go. And Kash Patel is the guy to do it. I mean, he has a long history. This is, again, why they don't like him, of criticizing bureaucrats. He drafted the 2018 Nunes memo, which alleged misconduct by the FBI when they obtained surveillance warrants during the Russia investigation against Trump. He's held numerous senior positions at the National Security Council, Office of Director of National Intelligence. He was the chief of staff to the acting U.S. Secretary of Defense. I mean, the guy's got a litany of experiences and backgrounds that qualify him to do this job. And primarily, he's a truth seeker. He didn't drink from the fire hose. He didn't drink the Kool-Aid, excuse me. He didn't agree under threat of penalty. And he paid the price for it. That's what I think the beauty of this is, that people like him and others who dared to speak against the leftist regime, they were sought after punitively. Some of them lost their jobs. Some of them were criminalized. They were punished. They were put in jail. I mean, that's a whole nother topic in general. But I think it is a beautiful, beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing to see some of these people who stood for truth during the hardest of times now being put in the position to do something right about it. I mean, I just read this morning, actually, in my devotion, in the book of Esther, the story of Mordecai. You know, Esther, if you don't know, it's an amazing story. Go read it. Esther's not that long of a book. Mordecai is her uncle. And basically, the king was going to kill all of the Jews in the land, etc. And this plot was exposed. So long story short, Mordecai ends up being put into this highest position under the king, extremely powerful, with all this authority, and they're able to take retribution and clean everything up. That's a total recap of the story. You got to read it yourself. But it reminds me of this, where, you know, this admin's coming in, and after all of these years of such just anti-American nonsense and hatred, we're just taking people who stood their ground, and we're giving them now the opportunity to do the right thing. And I'm confident he's going to get nominated. I don't think that they have much against him at all, other than we don't like him because he spoke against us. And I think that makes them look bad. And I think that's exactly why the Democrats lost the entire country this last election, because they're cowardly and they're hypocritical. And the American people saw their obsession with hating America, hating Christians, hating God, hating anybody who opposed them. And they just said, enough. That's enough. And this is what you get. You get Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., Kash Patel, Pete Hegseth, the list goes on and on and on. So I'm glad to see it. I think he'll get in. I do. Anyways,
Yeah, I think that's all we have for this week. We'll stay tuned and give an update on how these play out over the next week or so.
Stay up to date. As always, follow us on Instagram and watch us on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe. And you can also stay up to date on X, where I like to put out tidbits of news and especially big stuff going on. I'll jump on there. We'll go live sometimes. But if you haven't already, check out definingtruth.org. Definingtruth.org. You can go there and pick up a copy of my book, Defining Truth, Articulating America's Worldview. It's a little tool in your pocket to help in those difficult conversations on why are we here? Why is America what it is? Where did we come from? And how did God play a role in that as we shed light on the Christian Judaic values that are the pillars, the foundation of Western civilization? So until next time, keep defining truth.